How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Monday, November 2nd, 2009, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. A lot of news to talk about tonight, including Raw, and I got to start off with this because I got to get your thoughts on this. The main event on Raw, maybe it was designed this way, maybe this was a big joke on you and me and the internet, but the commentary in that match.
Yeah.
They made, for those that didn't see the show, it was a three-way dance, or a whatever they call it, triple threat match. Cena, Jericho, and Big Show, and they brought out DX to do commentary. And for like three quarters of the match, DX just made a complete mockery of the job of doing commentary, to the point where it was far more entertaining than the actual match. So they're joking and they're goofing around.
They were just making fun of Michael Cole, really.
Well, no, because Sean had the line about how there's a voice in my ear telling me that I really like seeing Cena double teamed here, and I don't know why. And
no, they were doing the whole voice in the ear thing because that was a running joke because from very early on in the commentary, Triple H was saying, you know, this job isn't as easy as it looks. It's really hard to talk when someone's yelling in your ear all the time.
Yeah. So regardless, they joked around for about three quarters of the match, and then suddenly there was about 30 seconds of silence on the part of DX. And when they start talking again, Shawn Michaels, in a very monotone voice, is saying such things as, "There is no end in the fight of John Cena."
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I don't know if they finally pushed Vince's buttons one too many times, or if this was all part of the game, but I barely even know what happened in this match because I was just enthralled with this commentary. And of course, the whole story of the match, which they did a terrible job getting over, because it was,
to say the least.
The story of the match was that this handicap match was very similar to the one we're going to see at Survivor Series with DX and Cena, and in the end, Cena was beaten by the tag team. And then, of course, afterwards, after Cena got punched in the face by Big Show and pinned by Jericho, DX hit the ring to make the save, and they got beaten up as well. So Jericho and the Big Show were left standing as a unit, which actually played up the main event of both the Raw and SmackDown brand, which is exactly the same, by the way.
Yeah.
And, that was something else there.
I thought that the idea of the match was to show that Undertaker's going to have a hard time keeping the title, although they kept doing the stat thing of
I hate the stats.
Even though it's 67%, you know, chance of Cena losing and one of them winning.
Either
and,
way, it makes no sense. The statistics don't matter at all.
Because it's a work sport. Of course they don't.
Well, no, I'm just saying that just because there are three guys doesn't mean you've got a 33% chance of winning.
No, actually, you don't. That's true.
What if the two guys suck? Maybe you have a 95% chance of winning.
Okay, but all three guys are equal because they all beat each other.
Which,
by the way, reminds me of a promo that started out having promise that went to hell.
My God. Well, let's just go backwards then.
I'm watching the promo. Remember we joked about, like, if they don't bring up that Cena lost to Triple H, then that match was completely useless. It made no sense. So they brought it up only to make sure that you knew that it was useless and made no sense.
Exactly. DX was backstage, and they had the midget hung up, and they were explaining to him that this gimmick infringement had to stop. And Sean said if it happened again, there'd be big trouble, and then Cena came up to rescue the little guy. And indeed, they start talking about Survivor Series. Hunter says, "I'm not sweating it. I beat you 2 weeks ago, John." And Sean says, "Hey, we're in England next week, and last time we were there, I beat you." And Cena's like, "I've beaten you both. We've all beat each other a million times." And I thought, how in the world is this building up this pay-per-view that's coming up this weekend?
Well, they made sure because then they saw we keep beating each other.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing was they showed the Bella Twins acting all grossed out. And then Cena is all mad because he said something stupid in front of pretty girls.
Sure.
And it's like,
so
well,
he's
that
a geek.
Was great build-up for a pay-per-view main event now, wasn't it?
Exactly.
That made me really interested in the pay-per-view that John Cena is really nerdy and says stupid things in front of pretty girls.
And we've seen this match 1,000 times.
Well, that too.
So yeah, that was the lead up to this main event with DX doing commentary. And I don't know. I mean, we've said it a million times. This was a segment that was, both of these segments were worthy of many laughs. But at the end of the day, you need to sell pay-per-views with your main eventers. And this was not doing it.
No.
No.
The main event actually was, the main event as what they did was you know, the right thing to do in a lot of ways if they actually explained what it was. But by not explaining it, it was kind of like, you know, the wrestlers were kind of doing the right thing, and somehow or other it didn't come across.
Somehow or another. I would say the commentary, actually.
Well, it was the commentary in that case.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that they just felt that it's more important to get those guys over to sell merchandise than the pay-per-view.
Well, hopefully some merchandise then.
Well, merchandise is down more than pay-per-views, so maybe that's their priority this week.
Well, if it's still down next quarter, then they need to rethink this.
Well, they pushed merchandise hard, you know, even though some of it was Ozzy Osbourne's book that's not even out until January anyway.
Yeah. Ozzy did open up the show in a throne. He had his wife with him to try to bring some semblance of sanity to this entire show. And it started out with basically 100 guys came out. It was Miz. He was angry about Evan Bourne. Legacy was out. They were angry about Kofi. Big Show was out. He was angry about being beaten up by everybody. And so they signed a number of matches for later on in the show, involving Evan Braun and Kobe Kingston.
Kobe Kingston, that was a good one.
They just need to name that guy John Smith at this point. How many guest hosts have screwed his name up now in the last couple of weeks?
Well, some of them will screw up John Smith, too.
Well, that's also true. So they plugged all this stuff. This went on forever and ended up with DX posing with the Osbournes. And I don't know, it was an opening segment. It was too long.
It was like 18 minutes. It felt like, I don't know if it was 18 minutes long, but it felt like it. But it was that was kind of my thought. It's like, okay, gone on a little bit too long now. Now let's get to something. But then we got to the U.S. title match first.
Yeah, we did. It was Miz and Evan Bourne and Evan Braun. They had a really fun little match that ended with... Actually, Evan took like the entire match, but then missed the shooting star. Miz gave him the skull-crushing finale, got the pin. I enjoyed it.
It was fine.
Yep.
It was all right. Yeah. I mean, it was short, though.
It was very short.
To me, like, I would have liked to have seen Evan Bourne have a few more minutes, but there's nothing wrong with the match, for sure.
We had Josh interviewing Sheamus, who vowed and followed through on his plan to end the career of Jamie Noble. He destroyed him and then finished up with a brutal powerbomb on the black mats outside, and they did the whole stretcher job, did the whole deal. I'm sure he'll be out of action longer than, for example, AJ Styles, who was taken out in an ambulance last week and is already back on Impact this Thursday.
And having a 4-star match.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, yeah.
Well, he's got great recuperative powers.
He's not a fighter, but I was going to say these fighters heal faster than normal men.
Yeah. Well, wrestlers do heal faster than normal people.
That's true.
Because if they don't, they're not going to be wrestlers for very long.
I had the swine flu yesterday, I think, and I'm back.
Yeah.
Wrestlers.
Well, not all wrestlers, I guess, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Josh interviewed Kobe about his match with Randy, and wanted to know if he had any regrets about beating up the car last week, and he said no. There was one thing on the car he didn't touch. It was Randy's mirrors. That led to Orton and Kofi, which went
that
like...
That was a little too inside.
Yeah. Well, that was part of the... It was kind of, but it was also the storyline they were playing off last week, in the sense that Orton was... He loved his own image on the car.
Yeah, well, that's inside, too. I mean, you know the whole deal about how Randy Orton is always staring at himself.
I'm shocked.
In the mirror. Oh, you are? Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Come on. We had Orton versus Kofi, and went about a minute, and then Legacy ran down, and then Ozzy appeared, and Sharon changed to a 6-man. So we got Orton, Legacy, and Kofi. I'm sorry, Orton and Legacy against Kofi, MVP, and Mark Henry. Which
I was really disappointed. You know why?
This was.
I wanted to see Ozzy Osbourne remember who MVP and Mark Henry were.
Oh, come on.
They didn't make him do that.
And this was pre-taped. Think about that.
Yeah.
How many takes it must have taken for him to not get their names right? So they had a all-action 6-man and finished with Mark Henry pinning Cody with the World's Strongest Slam, which caused Orton to get very, very upset. And I guess we'll see if they actually do the 8-man at Survivor Series.
We're 2 weeks away, right? No, 3 weeks away. They didn't do anything for Survivor Series at all.
No, I mean, just the main event.
As even mentioned another match.
Yeah, just the main event.
There was something in that match. now what was it that something happened in that match, and now I don't remember what it is. It had to do, well, they just, let's see, they pinned Cody, and what was it? Oh, the Ted DiBiase thing. It's another week where it's like just didn't happen.
Yeah, they're doing the slow build.
they're going backwards.
Sometimes you go so slow, you go backwards. I think that's what they're doing here.
I mean, they were right at a nice pace 2 weeks ago, and then they just forgot that they were anywhere. They forgot it happened.
Well, I don't know what to say, except that no one should be surprised about that, I guess.
The closest thing to a tease was Cody saying that that we bought the car, and then Ted saying that he actually paid more than Cody for the car. And that was the closest thing.
Well, he should have. He's the son of the Million-Dollar Man.
Yeah, I know. And the other one's
a plumber.
The son of a plumber.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No money in that family.
Yeah.
We had Lawler in the ring.
He spent it all. It's like him and Ric Flair.
Yeah, well, happens. Lawler was in the ring to introduce Raw's Got Talent. And Great Khali was the third celebrity judge, dressed in a suit. And they had Santino come out and bite the head off a bat man. And then, yeah, Sharon proclaimed that rubbish. She was correct. Chris Masters flexed his pecs to the beat of Crazy Train, which actually caused Ozzy to laugh uproariously.
That was tremendous. I swear, that was like, I was thinking that he was going to do some posing routine. And I guess in a sense he did. But that Chris Masters thing should have been terrible. And I thought it was just awesome. And they treated it like it was terrible, but I just thought that was awesome.
That was his most charismatic performance of all time.
Yeah. But and it wasn't treated like that.
No, it was not. It was meant to be horrible comedy. And finally, we had Chavo and Jillian coming out to sing a duet. And, of course, they were horrible as well. And basically, they told him they sucked. And so Jillian told Ozzy he sucked. And they got in the ring. Sharon slapped her. The place went nuts. Chavo got in Sharon's face, and then Great Khali stood up and gave him a karate chop, and then the midget came out dressed as Jack Osborne and gave Chavo the frog splash. Train wreck TV at its finest.
Yeah.
We had Ricky Hatton announced for Raw next week. At least we've got a fan for once here.
Yeah.
Divas Battle Royal. Kelly Gale, Bellas, Alicia Fox, and Eve for the number one...
They turned some people. Did you notice that?
Did they what?
Well, we had nothing but baby faces and one heel, and then the heel went and survived and beat every single baby face, which kind of makes for a baby face, in my book.
Well, it's shades of gray here.
Yeah.
In the women's division.
They need to be turning, I don't know if it's the Bella Twins or Gail Kim or someone, but they are very unbalanced on this. And you had a baby face champion and all baby faces at this point.
Yeah.
And one heel, who's Alicia Fox.
So Alicia won, tossed out Kelly, and then they had...
I thought Eve Torres tried so hard, but damn, there were some moments in that battle royal that were pretty bad.
I think she threw an elbow and fell on her ass. That was the one I remember.
Yeah, she threw two straight drop kicks. The first one wasn't too good. Second one was pretty good. But there were some bad exchanges in there.
And they put Melina backstage next to a screen of the match and had her stand in such a way that she couldn't possibly actually see the screen. But she had to pretend she did, and it looks really phony. We had the Jamie Noble update. He's got serious back and neck injuries. We're going to get another update next week. And then Cole said, and I quote,
I thought they did a great job with Sheamus.
Well, sure.
You know.
That's not going to change.
They did. Hey, you know, they did.
Yeah.
When was the last time they did?
It's been a while.
Somebody new.
And he's got good connections.
In 2005.
I was going to say Evan Bourne, and look at how that turned out. But
I mean, look at Jack Swagger's winning streak.
That's true, yeah.
He's been banished from Raw.
Yeah, he was there tonight.
Well, he did show up.
He distracted Eve.
Yeah, he did show up in the Women's Battle Royal for a split second.
So there's a heel in the women's division.
Yeah. What, Jack Swagger?
Sure.
Okay.
We had DX, and actually this is where the DX deal... Oh, no, first we had, before the DX thing, we had Ozzy and Sharon, and Jericho walked in, and... He talked a lot of stuff and didn't mention a single time his own band, Fozzy Osbourne, which I thought was a little disappointing. But anyway, he said he was better than them, and then he left, and Ozzy said, I don't think so, and that was the last we saw of that. So it's kind of a pointless little segment there. And
well, he got to meet him.
He did get to meet him. That is true.
That was good, because obviously that was one of his childhood heroes.
And he didn't make mention of that, yeah.
And he did say that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the show. Then we had the main event and all the wackiness with the commentary and everything like that. And that is where we stand on Raw. So, thank God they had those extra weeks. Yeah, they had those extra weeks to build up Survivor Series and proceeded to do nothing with it.
So we don't... maybe they'll do something. They kind of cooled off Orton and Kofi Kingston because, to me, they... You know, when they started that match, the people were really hot. It's like that angle got over. Because when they did that first, you know, like the bell rang and they were just kind of looking at each other, it was like that kind of heat where people actually wanted to see the match. And then about a minute in, you know, they just kind of went to a three-way. And in the three-way, Orton and Kofi was never really a focal point of the match.
Well, I mean, at the end of the match, Orton was on the outside really mad and Kofi was sticking his head through the ropes and taunting him. So I think they are trying to save that one. I don't know if we'll get the singles match at Survivor Series, but... I think they are going to pull the trigger on that at some point, slowly.
Yeah.
Or they'll do it next week and I'll look like an idiot. Or a prophet, one or the other. I want to get your thoughts before we go to the Impact tapings on the fact that the final quarter of Impact was the lowest rated quarter on the entire show.
Well, that happens often. I don't worry too much about the TNA quarter hours, you know, other than, you know, the women usually do real well and stuff, but... I mean, they were going against the World Series. It may have been like a good time during the baseball game, for all I know. I don't know.
Two hours of build for Hulk Hogan, and that's the least watched segment on the show.
It's not good. I mean, if that's what you mean. But again, if their rating was a 1.0, and everybody would go, oh my God, right after all that Hulk Hogan publicity, they got a 1.0. I wouldn't really be concerned, because this thing is either going to work or it's not going to work, and the rating of this last week is not an indication either way that it was good or bad. You know, I mean, if it's going to work or not going to work is going to depend on if Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan can run a wrestling company that, you know, I mean, that's basically it. If they can do that, if you know, and one week rating, you know, I think Hogan will help ratings in the short term very, you know, a little bit, and then that it'll probably go back to normal unless they've got some great ideas. And you know, they didn't, you know, well, you know, one thing is people didn't know Hogan wasn't going to be there today. And the crowd at the Impact Zone was smaller than usual for the taping tonight, which was not a good sign. That was, so, you know, that's one, you know, one thing to think about right away. No Bischoff there, which was the thing we were talking about last night, you know, was he going to be there? And he was not. And that's also, you know, considered by some people to be a bad sign, because it's a sign that, you know, they're not that into it. Although he's talked a little bit more in Hogan in some of his interviews. I think he was in Minneapolis. He was in Chicago, Minneapolis, and I think today St. Louis, you know, doing his book tour. And he's talked a little bit more about TNA. Did you hear the one about that Hulk Hogan taught Vince McMahon the wrestling business?
Missed that one.
Okay, here's the deal. When we were actually talking about this the other night, what happened was, this is the chronology that Hulk Hogan had. Vince's father died, okay, which was May of 1984. And then Vince brought him in, and he moved next door to Vince. Vince brought him in. That was 1983. So it doesn't exactly add up. But
that was a long closing.
Okay. And then he taught Vince, who knew nothing, both the wrestling business that Vince had been working in since 1970 and had owned the company since 1982, that's Vince Jr., and he also taught Vince how to lift weights.
Huh.
And Vince was a big dude in the 70s, long before there was ever a Hulk Hogan. Not as big as he would eventually be. You know, I mean, Hulk Hogan did,
teach him how to lift weights.
By what came out in the trial and everything. Hulk Hogan was the one who turned Vince onto steroids in 1986, so there is some truth to him not teaching Vince how to lift weights, but teaching Vince how to get the most out of lifting weights. Even though Hulk Hogan himself says that his physique looked better when he stopped doing steroids.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that Vince was in the business for as long as he was, and he wasn't introduced until 1986 to steroids.
That's what came out in the trial. There are definitely people skeptical of that.
Hmm.
But, you know, because it was one of the big points in the trial was how Vince didn't use any steroids till he was 41 years old and how unusual that is. And why would that be? They actually asked Hogan that. And then Hogan, like, wouldn't give an answer, you know. But, you know, the answer was supposed to be that, you know, he, which Hogan wouldn't say under oath, but that, but it was actually Vince's lawyers to try to get Hogan to say it, that Hogan was the one who talked Vince into trying steroids.
Hmm.
So.
What did you, actually, let's do Impact here very quickly. And actually, first off, since I'm thinking about it, what did you think of the Dragon Gate pay-per-view?
I'm not through with it yet. The Masato Yoshino Dragon Kid match was tremendous, and the Bryan Danielson Naruki Doi match I thought was, you know, I thought that match was maybe the best match I've seen all year, or close to it. That match was fantastic. The tag team match that was in between with the Chikara guys and the Dragon Gate guys, I thought that match was kind of a mess when Jigsaw blew out his knee and instead of adapting the match to the fact that he blew out his knee, they actually tried to do every single spot they had planned, and it was just ridiculous. So I didn't think that match, like, the effort was there. There was some very cool stuff with Mike Quackenbush in that match, but I really didn't think that was that great of a match. In fact, in some points I didn't like it. Other points I thought it was good. But the Bryan Danielson match I thought was phenomenal. And if the Davey Richards match is better, which I guess you told me that, then that must be a hell of a match.
It is something to see, I will say that.
I mean, that Danielson match was unbelievably good.
It was really, really great, yes.
So far, I in the Shima Brian Kendrick, they edited that thing down 2.5 minutes, so I don't know how that match was, but for the 2.5 minutes that they showed, which was, you know, just a bunch of high spots, I mean, it was like an introduction, one high spot, and then, like, the last, you know, the finish. I mean, it was fine to watch. I mean, so, put it this way, I mean, if you're, like, on the fence, you really should buy it. And I haven't even seen the best match on the show, and I will tell you, you should buy it just for that the Danielson match alone, let alone the Dragon Kid match, the Dragon Kid match was better than any match on WWE or TNA pay-per-views in a long time. And the Danielson match would have been either the best or the second. If it was on a WWE pay-per-view, it would have been either the best or second best match of the year, depending on what you think of Undertaker and Michaels. In some ways, I thought the Danielson match was better than Undertaker and Michaels, but they're not as big a star, so in that aura thing isn't there for sure with those two guys. But as far as what they did and everything else, that match was just tremendous. So that was what I thought. So far, I think it's a great pay-per-view.
It is certainly something to pick up. It's debuts on Friday, and I think in most places it's $14.95. It may be $19.95 where you're at, but regardless, if you're somebody who normally buys WWE or TNA pay-per-views, you would be a fool not to purchase this particular show. So
it's so enjoyable. I mean, it's like, even like that one match, which, you know, again, I thought it went too long and there were problems. I mean, you still can't fault the effort, and there was the good parts of that match were better than most matches that you'll see on pay-per-view. I mean,
yeah.
And the bad parts were just inexperience, I thought, in some cases, just not able to adapt to your match, and just, you know, I kind of don't like that. So that, I was a little negative on that match.
We have the Impact spoilers from Orlando. As noted, Hogan and Bischoff both no-showed. Actually, I shouldn't say no-showed. They weren't ever going to be there, I guess. So this Thursday's show, I guess the big notes were we had one mention of Hulk Hogan by AJ Styles.
I'm sure there's more. That's the only one they did in front of the crowd.
The only live one, yeah.
Yeah.
So we had that, and then more stuff to set up the...
No Kurt Angle and no Kevin Nash.
That's right. Kevin Nash is, I guess, still under paid suspension.
He's suspended with pay.
Yeah. Tough job.
Yeah. Well, they're going to punish him. You know what they're going to do? I don't know this for sure, but this was what was talked about a couple days ago.
Oh, God.
You know how they have to... You know what they're going to do to punish him? Because there's not really much they can do. They're going to make him work a house show. That'll show him.
They got him there. Wow. We had Desmond Wolfe killing Cody Deaner. And, of course, no Angle, as you noted, because he's out with his supposed injury. And as far as other stuff on the show, we've got Foley and Abyss, who are now best pals. And we've got a match of the pay-per-view with Abyss versus Stevie.
No, that's not on the pay-per-view.
I'm sorry.
That's done tomorrow's taping.
That's right. This is tomorrow. Abyss versus Stevie. And if Stevie loses, he has to leave TNA forever, and I guess it's going to lead to someone saving Stevie and setting up Foley and Abyss versus Stevie and the partner at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Lashley beat Homicide. Didn't Lashley just do an interview where he said if UFC or Strikeforce offered him an exclusive deal, he'd take it and leave wrestling behind?
Well, if UFC did, of course he would. And if Strikeforce made him choose, he would, because MMA is his priority. But my impression of the Strikeforce deal is that he's going to be able to wrestle and do Strikeforce. But he's very close to signing with Strikeforce right now. In fact, they made a very lucrative long-term offer to him. And the only reason he hasn't signed it yet is because the time frame is so long that it would preclude him going to UFC for a long time, and he's not sure he wants to, you know. I mean, you know, his thing, he really wants to fight Brock Lesnar. He thinks that's like this giant money match. And, you know, I mean, if he goes 11-0 and they bring him in and he fights Lesnar, it actually would be a giant money match if Lesnar continues to win. But by signing with Strikeforce, he's hurting his chances for that dream match. So I can see why he's a little bit, he hasn't jumped at signing that contract. But his people who are advising him, I think, are just telling him, you know, like, just go with Strikeforce. They'll groom you and everything like that. I mean, Coker knows how to build talent, you know, as long as, you know, Bobby doesn't get careless, you know, against a guy he should beat. I mean, Coker kept Kung Lee unbeaten for God knows how many years. So, you know, he'll develop him slowly and give him guys that, you know, he should be able to beat up, you know, move up the ladder. You know, eventually, you know, Lashley's going to have to be good, or he's going to have to fight somebody good who will beat him. But you know, it won't be, you know, in the next few fights.
Yeah. And I doubt this will be the main event of the TV. Maybe it will. Beautiful People and Kong against ODB, Sarita and Taylor Wilde and Tara. Which...
Yeah, they did Daniels and Styles with Styles winning, and then Joe choking out Styles, and a 3D turned heel, and then them and Matt Morgan, I mean, them and Rhino are now a team, so I don't know what's going on there.
Shocking.
Well, I mean, it was being built up, but it wasn't the plan 2 weeks ago.
Shocking.
Yes. Hmm. So, I don't know.
And I guess is Kong turned heel or?
Well, Kong's fighting Tara on the pay-per-view, so Kong is a heel again.
Okay. Well, why not?
Yeah.
And I presume Kim Couture thing is just out the window.
No one's talking about it, but they really, there's really not much they can do because Kim Couture's got her fight with Carrie Vera on November 20th. So until that's over, you know. But my gut is that they won't go back to it. I think they're just going to forget about it because they were expecting a lot more buzz out of that than they got. I mean, they thought that was going to be the talk of the MMA world and the wrestling world, and in fact, neither world really cared at all about it.
Could they have just called one of us to check?
Yeah, but they didn't.
Hmm.
They wanted it. They couldn't call us because then it wouldn't be a surprise, number one. And also, then we would know it wasn't a shoot, which it was supposed to be, remember?
Well, did either of us for 2 seconds think it was a shoot?
Well, but they thought they could fool people.
Hmm. Well, bad idea.
Yeah.
Christian and Yoshitatsu against Ezekiel Jackson and Vladimir Kozlov is the ECW main event tomorrow. And...
Oh, that makes sense from last week's TV.
Yep.
By the way, did you see that Christian Yoshitatsu match?
I loved it.
Great match, yeah.
Yeah. ECW is like, it's a show every week where I kind of always think, why do I bother watching this show? And then the show's over and it's like, that was really good wrestling on that show. I actually thought Christian and Jericho was maybe even better the week before.
Really? I didn't. I liked the Yoshitatsu. The Christian Jericho match was good, but I thought the Yoshitatsu match was great.
I loved Christian and Jericho.
Yeah.
I loved that match.
I loved Christian Yoshitatsu. I thought that it blew away Jericho and, not blew away, but was significantly still better than Jericho and Kofi Kingston. I thought it was better than the Cena-Randy Orton match.
Oh, well, God, that's not saying too much.
Well, I thought Cena-Randy Orton was good. I mean, just, you know, as a 60-minute match, it just dragged in a lot of places.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Christian and Yoshitatsu never dragged for a second. It was paced perfectly. I mean, it's the same. You know, the one thing is like, Christian does these 15-minute matches, not every week, but many weeks on ECW. We do it with Zack Ryder, and he's doing it with a lot of people. And they're sort of like the same exact pattern in every single match, you know. And Christian does the same exact moves every time out, which I'm not knocking because anyone that works 20-minute matches is going to be pretty repetitive. But it's like it does always work, and it is really good, and it always elevates the guy. He beats the guy at the end. but he elevates every single guy to a degree. You know, I mean, now the booking, sometimes they drop the ball with a guy afterwards, like with Zack Ryder, you know, like, you know, he had two really good matches with Christian, and then they kind of like, you know, sort of dropped the ball with, you know, on his momentum. But the point is Christian himself is just doing just a phenomenal job in that role.
Let's jump into the mailbag here, do a couple of questions before we wrap it up. Of course, if you have questions, you can always send them to...
I got
to
talk about two things before we go.
Oh, that's right,
before we start. Okay. First of all was the question on Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone, in fact, I was wrong about the thing. He left. The circumstance where he left was what I said last night, in the sense that TBS, Jeff Carr, made the call that they were going to go with one lead announcer as the voice of WCW, and they chose Jim Ross, and Tony Schiavone got mad and left WCW and went to work for Vince McMahon. But he didn't come back when Jim Ross was on the outs. He actually came back earlier. He came back in, I think, 1990. It would have been Super Royal Rumble. He came back before Bill Watts came in because his wife didn't like living in Connecticut and the cost of living was high, and he had a lot of kids. And even though he was getting paid a good amount of money by the company, he was taking in, because of the cost of living, significantly less than he was in Atlanta. So he was able to get his job back in Atlanta, and he came back, and he was the number two guy under Jim Ross when he came back, until Jim Ross, you know, in the Bill Watts fallout, lost his announcing position. And that's when Tony became the number one guy at TBS, which actually is a spot that he kept until the company went out of business. So that's the Schiavone story. And the other question that I said I was going to answer was, is Brock Lesnar healthy and training? And the answer is no to both. So that's the answer.
All right, back to the mailbag here. This person says, I was watching WCW Halloween Havoc 1998 for the first time the other day. In addition to the really bad Hogan and Ultimate Warrior match, the main event with Goldberg and DDP just stopped midway through and the show ended, so I didn't even get to see who won the match. And did this actually happen?
Goldberg won.
And what was the story back then?
Okay, there's actually a funny story, because the WWE DVD had the story all wrong. What happened was, to cross people up, Eric Bischoff, about a week before the show, decided that, you know, because the pay-per-views always end, you know, at 2 hours and 47 minutes in those days. Now they go a little bit, like 2:55, 2:57, whatever. You know, TNA tries to go right to the end, and WWE tries to go about 2:40. The goal is 2:47, but sometimes they go over. Well, anyway, the point of all this is that Eric Bischoff said, everyone knows when these things are over, so what we're going to do is we're going to swerve everyone, and we're going to do a 3.5-hour pay-per-view. So they told, you know, all the cable companies, we're doing a 3.5-hour pay-per-view. And anyway, what happened was, many companies, I think it was like about 25%, didn't get the message, or if they got the message, they just assumed.
Actually,
you know,
I think for a lot of them, what happened was they had already an automatic shutoff scheduled at the 3-hour mark.
Well, that's because they didn't get the word, or
it overrode it.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is that they didn't. Yeah, it was just a total disaster. So, but they actually, it was not that they didn't. You know, like the DVD was like they couldn't even end the show on time. The fact was is they did end the show on time because they scheduled the show for 3.5 hours, and 25% of the companies either just for some reason or another, you know, didn't get the word, got the word, and just didn't think about it, and you know, just shut the thing off at the 3-hour mark. Not all of them. I mean, more than half did not, you know, actually didn't, you know, actually showed the whole thing. But there were, so anyway, that's what happened. And that's the basic story. And then Goldberg won. And the funny part of all this is, the next day, because so many people did not get to see the finish, what they did was they replayed the Goldberg DDP match on Nitro, and did something like a 6.8. quarter hour, and Nitro actually beat Raw, and this was when Raw was winning most weeks, you know, after it turned around. So Nitro actually beat Raw the next day, and I remember in WWE, this is like how crazy that wrestling war was, okay? Because WCW had to refund a lot of money. I think it was over, you know, it wasn't as much as they said on the DVD, but it was maybe $1 million, which is significant amount of money. And the WWE people were just, like, fuming on Tuesday because, like, they cheated. They cheated to beat us. And it's like, they gave back $1 million. What are you crying about?
Yeah.
You know, because they got one great quarter hour and they ended up winning the night. You know, it's like, big deal. And then, you know, WWE probably won the next five, you know, I don't remember, but I presume they won the next several weeks. It was like a one-week fluke because they had that great quarter. But, geez, you know, you're going to cry. They made $1 million botch, you know, which wasn't even really their fault. And you're saying that, like, you know, that, like, the whole thing was WWE thought that they botched that and screwed that up, and all those companies turned it off, and they did it on purpose so they could show a Goldberg pay-per-view match on free TV the next day and cheat to beat them in the ratings.
I do remember there was one cable company that when people called for refunds, they were told that you saw most of the pay-per-view, so we're only going to give you part of your money back. So that's cheap.
Well, I mean, the funny part is that, like, you know, at the last thing that those were the ones that did get it cut off, the last thing they saw was that Hogan Warrior match, which was just horrible.
There was a horrible TNA pay-per-view 4 or 5 months ago. I forget which one it was. The really, really, really bad one. I think it might have been the one with Jenna Maraska's match. But I called my cable company to try to get a refund, and they denied me. So.
Oh.
This person here says, I'm looking for some help and trying to understand what exactly the relationship between Ric Flair and Triple H is. It seemed immediately... Yeah, that's a good one. Seemed immediately upon Flair's debut in WWE, Triple H latched on him. Out of character, would call Ric Flair one of his mentors and his idols, which then led to the two being in evolution together. Triple H gives Flair the highest praise on every WWE-produced Flair DVD. Triple H was always the focal point of every Ric Flair in-ring tribute over the years. They were always very buddy-buddy. Part about this that I don't understand is that prior to Flair entering the WWE, Triple H had absolutely nothing good to say about him. When there was a possibility for Flair to join the WWF in 1998, the Observer said that Triple H was the loudest to speak up against it, saying Flair was a has-been, too old to cut in on the WWE roster. During word association on Off the Record, he called Flair washed up. That was 10 years ago. I said that and said, wow, because recent history paints them as such pals. What caused such a complete change in tune to the point Triple H was willing to lose to Flair? Willing to lose to him. I seem to recall there was a match he should have lost to him, and he didn't, but regardless.
No, but he did lose one match when they did a three-match feud. I think he lost the middle match.
Yeah.
No, the one in Greensboro where he should have lost.
Yeah.
He didn't because it was much too important to build up that two-minute match with Regal the next week.
Sure, yeah. Is this,
you know,
just
like
a...
those of us who thought that Ric Flair should win his last match at the Greensboro Coliseum, you know, of his whole career, didn't see the big picture.
No, we didn't.
Did you know that story? Mick Foley went up to him and actually said, like, you know, this was Ric Flair's last match at the Greensboro Coliseum. You know, I mean, the building that he's most famous in, and you know, you should have let him win. And Triple H goes, Mick, you don't see the big picture.
I still don't see it all these years later, actually.
What?
I still don't see it all these years later.
Yeah, well.
Anyway,
it was because they had to build up the Regal match.
Is this just a case of Hunter being Hunter, or is there something of substance to it?
This is a really weird question that I don't really have a good answer for. Ric Flair and Triple H are best friends, okay? They really are. However, he did say all those things before Ric Flair came in. Undertaker did too, which is funny because, you know, when Flair was... in one of his falling outs with WCW, and they were heavily recruiting him in WWE to come over. And he was very close to making that move. You know, Undertaker buried Flair, you know, just you know, and Triple H did as well. You know, Triple H probably a little more than Undertaker, but they were the two, you know, they were two of the top guys there, and they buried him. You know, he's washed up, he's an embarrassment that he's still wrestling, things like this. And this is, you know, again, this is like late 90s. And I don't know. My impression was that was part of the reason that Flair stayed with WCW at the time, was that, if, you know, if they're going to say that, you know, I might as well just stay in WCW where, you know, at least, you know, I've got the legacy and this and that. So, you know, then he went there and they did Evolution and, you know, all that. And then it was funny because I've talked to people in creative about this, is, you know, they were best friends. And, you know, Flair would always get the big crowd reactions, and there was always that thing of, you know, let's do this angle with Flair, or let's give him this big run. And Triple H would always, in the meetings, talk bad about him, you know, always. And, you know, not as a person, but just, we can't do that because, there's no credibility. And it's like, you know, credibility in the company with, you know, Hornswoggle and Chavo Guerrero, you know what I mean? But I mean, but he would always make that argument. There's no credibility if we let him beat like the top guys. So, you know, he would always lose to the top guys, except for Mick Foley, who insisted on putting him over, you know, and so anyway, it was it's a weird deal. You know, I think that Triple H thinks that, you know, that they are friends, but he puts business in front of friendship, and I think that whatever it is, whatever the reason is, you know, he wanted him to be on top, but there was, in his mind, a credibility issue, and so therefore he didn't want him as a singular guy being considered at the level of, you know, Orton, Batista, and himself, you know, or something. I don't know. It's all quite strange, you know. And
it's all wrestling.
It's all wrestling. And, you know, the whole deal of, like, the promo stuff is even weirder because, you know, they had that whole big thing of, you know, Ric Flair's not allowed to do, you know, promos on the show because, you know, Ric Flair doesn't know how to do promos. You know, I mean, that was really weird. Then he would come and do a promo, and it would be, like, you know, the best promo in weeks and weeks and weeks, and everybody would say it, and then they wouldn't let him do promos again. And there was that whole period where they didn't want him ever doing Woo because, you know, it's like that was too Southern. You know, it's
too
very
Southern.
Strange. But I don't have a good answer to that question other than, you know, the observation is correct. You know, Triple H and Ric Flair are best friends, and Triple H has buried him, you know, many, many times.
This person wants to know any update on the Pope. He was not on the spoilers.
I don't know what it is. It was a family emergency, and it's, you know, I'm not, I actually should ask what it is. I just haven't, but, you know, yeah, it was a family issue that he had to go home for, and I believe that whatever it is, you know, is I don't know if the worst is taken care of or the worst is over or whatever. He should be returning soon, but yeah, that's what it is.
This person says, with the recent questions about Vince passing on and leaving the company in the hands of Hunter and Stephanie, Dave talked about the possibility of Vince outliving them both. What horrible disease does Triple H have? I'm joking. What direction do you think things would go in if that were to happen? They would go in the same direction they're going now.
The same direction that we're going every week that they're changed. I saw like one thing on the board where people are like trying to come up with these reasons on why the title changes hands so often. You know, like if it's like some sort of plan. The reason the title changes hands so often is because the chairman of the board changes his mind every day. I mean, if you haven't noticed, think of poor John Laurinaitis, the guy who has to book house show lineups, okay? And he has to he books these house show cards, and every week, practically, he has to change the entire card because what they told him they've changed their mind on. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I guess you can because that's just what happens. But
very rare to hear the term poor John Laurinaitis.
Well, I mean, hey, look, if it was my job to book 2 months' worth of house shows, and every week I had to redo them after booking cards, I would feel sorry for myself. I mean, it's bad enough with UFC when you know, like someone gets injured, and I feel sorry for Joe Silva when, you know, all these guys get injured all at the same time. But it's not like he has to rebook the entire card because they've changed their mind on all the angles. He only has to, you know, rebook the guys who get hurt.
Why don't they just say Raw is coming to Seattle, Washington, and these stars are going to be there live, and just list everybody on the roster that's going to be there? Why do you even have to have matchups? Who even cares in 2009 if Cena's going to place Randy Orton?
But they still advertise them because that's just what they do.
Well, it's 2009. Things need to change.
I agree with you.
It's like a 10-point must system.
I think you might as well do that because, number one, you never know where you're going to be by the time you get there because that's just the nature of how they book. And the other one is just why you false advertise? I mean, I've never seen any positive in false advertising, but they do it, and you know, they feel they have the right to, and so they do.
You know, I don't want to go off on a big tirade here, so I'm going to limit this discussion to approximately 30 seconds. But when I read this interview from Cecil Peoples, and he's talking about how the 10-point must system is flawed, and he says
he pointed that he said that I haven't seen that interview.
Yes, and he says my idea is that we do half points.
No, that you read that wrong. That was my article. It was my idea that they do half points.
Oh, Dave.
That's my idea.
No.
That's my idea. Nelson Hamilton, who's another judge, who also judge that fight for Machida, but Nelson Hamilton actually wrote a big formal proposal to the Association of Boxing Commissions explaining, you know, the whole thing of, it's not necessarily half points, but it's the whole deal of we have to have differentiation in scoring between close rounds and not so close rounds.
Yes.
We have to have that. So he suggested half points.
Okay. I'm almost positive. I'll find this article because I'm almost positive Cecil Peoples brought this up as well.
I don't think that was Cecil Peoples. That was Doc Hamilton. Cecil Peoples doesn't even know what points are.
It's probably true. But the half point system, can't we just, I've said this many times, just give 5 points if a guy did really bad.
Okay, here's the deal. I completely agree with you, but these judges have it so freaking indoctrinated in their head that you know, you have to beat the hell out of somebody to get anything but a 10-9. So my feeling was, okay, if you're going to give 10-9s, then at least give 10 to 9.5s when it's really close. So at least there's some different. I'm just looking for differentiation between this even round when two guys are totally even. You know, like one of those rounds where when it's over, it's like I have no idea who won the round. So I have to flip a coin and go, okay, I'm giving it to this guy. And that counts as much as, you know, winning a round and handily thrashing the other guy just short of not like. Like, if you have a guy and you're, like, going from submission to submission and just, like, but you're not getting the submission. You're not tapping him, but you're schooling him the whole round. They will give you a 10-9 because you didn't bludgeon him to death. You know, you've got to bludgeon this guy. You've got to have him on the ground. You've got to be pounding his face in, or you've got to knock him down, like, 3 times and have him, you know, on the verge of losing, but somehow, you know, he just survives and hangs on for the round or the bells or the horn saves him. And then you'll get a 10-8, okay? But since that rarely happens, every round is a 10-9, and every round is valued the same, and you get these numerical things where the wrong guy, you know, there have been many fights, I said this before, I write it all the time, where I go, I thought fighter B won the fight, however, my scorecard has fighter A winning, and that's why it's like that frickin' electoral college versus popular vote thing in presidential elections. It's like the popular vote should win. But we came up with this electoral college system for God only knows what reason. I mean, I'm sure it was a valid reason in the 1700s when our forefathers came up with it. But the point being, in 2009, it should be the guy with the most votes should win. And the guy who wins the fight should win the fight, not the guy who wins on some scoring system that you've made up because boxing happened to use that scoring system. And we had and these commissions decide we're going to make MMA like boxing, even though it's a different sport. And the fact is this scoring system, this 10-9 scoring system, doesn't work in boxing either because, quite frankly, there are more bad decisions in boxing than there are in MMA anyway. You know,
sure.
People go, well, at least in boxing you have 12 rounds to make up for it. You know what? I mean, the scoring system doesn't work in boxing either. The whole scoring of fighting sports, there needs to be better judges. That's all I can say.
No, it isn't even...
K1 the other night where it was just freaking ludicrous. And that Machida decision, which, you know, the decision was bad, but then Cecil Peoples' explanation of it how is this guy able to judge when he goes and says, I don't count leg kicks, when that was the predominant offensive move in that entire fight? I don't count them because, you know, you have to understand that they don't lead to finishes or that no one gets finished with leg kicks. And it's like, but they do. And in that fight, that, you know, that was the predominant move.
Here's my take on this very quickly here. I know we exceeded our 30-second. My 30-second thing that I'd said, but you're not necessarily... Here's my thing. You're not necessarily going to get good judges. So have a system
well,
that an
should.
Idiot...
That's a terrible argument that...
But hold on.
They need to find these guys that are not good judges, and they need to replace them with people who are good judges.
Okay, well history has shown that's not going to happen.
Well,
so,
I know it's not going to happen, just like we're going to have this frickin' 10-9... thing forever because no one's going to ever change anything.
Here's my idea. You need to make this system such that an idiot can figure it out, which means...
Well, that's not going to work either.
There's 10 points, and you give each guy on a scale of 1 to 10 how many points he deserves for the round. If you get your ass completely handed to you, you don't deserve 8 points. Maybe you deserve 2 points for surviving. And they should allow 10-10 rounds.
Well, they do allow them, but then the deal with the 10-10 rounds is, judges believe, and I've had judges tell me this, it's like on a close round, you know, I'll give a 10-10, and they'll go, well, if you give a 10-10, you're not going to be, you know, you're going to be replaced as a judge. So they're scared to give 10-10s.
Yeah, you know who came up with that was Armando Garcia threatened people with that. He's gone!
It's not. They still feel that. I mean, how many 10-10 rounds were at the last UFC? There were zero. Not one judge gave a 10-10 round, and there were several close rounds on that show. On every show, there's close rounds, and you almost never see a 10-10. Judges are afraid of 10-10s.
Remember that Caleb Starnes fight where, like, he was running away and Nate Quarry was putting his hand over his face and mocking him the entire thing?
Well, in the third round, that mocking him saved the fight because the people were just hated that fight. That was up in Montreal.
The point was, they gave Caleb Starnes 24 total points for this. It was a 30-24, which is absurd as that is. It's still absurd that he got 24 points.
Yeah.
This should have been like a 30-10 fight if I would have scored this thing.
Well, you know what? You're right, but it's just never. They got to overhaul this system. They got to get these judges, and they got to go look. You know, you got to differentiate. A close round is 10-10. If you don't know who won, or 10-9 is for a real close round. 10-8 is when one guy wins, and if a guy beats the hell out of the other guy, it's 10-5. You know, something like that, and then you'll get. Scoring that's more indicative of what really happened. But right now, that's not happening. And the point is that nobody wants to change the current system. I mean, I'm sure UFC does, but they're not in charge of judging. I mean, that's up to the commissions. And I mean, that whole Doc Hamilton thing. I mean, he wrote that nice proposal, and I happen to know about it because he told me about it. And I had written the same. Actually, I had written the identical thing. But the point is that nobody listened and nobody cared. And we still have the judging is going exactly the same. And a year from now, it's still going to be the same. And we're still going to have fights where the wrong guy wins because of the nature of the 10-point must system. I mean, it's one thing like when it's a close fight that can go either way. I don't even care about close fight can go either way. Technically, a fight that probably should be a draw, and one guy wins, that's just the nature of the beast. But I hate it when you have a situation where, a guy should be champion and he's not champion because of, a series of flaws. I mean, like a judge that won't score leg kicks or just a system where they decided that, he won those first two rounds, which I don't think he won, but... if he won them close, and the other guy, and the other guy won the other rounds not so close, that maybe would have the result would have come out differently. Maybe it wouldn't have. But the point is the way the system is right now, it leads to problems. I mean, and what's even worse is when people start talking about what we should do is we should split it up and have points for striking and points for grappling and in every round. And it's like numbers you give.
That's bad enough as it is.
Yeah, the right way to do it, honest to God, the right way to do it is when the fight is over. You write, and I did. They did this from 1995, I think. When did they? The first judging would have been, I think, it may have been 96 when they brought in judging after it was after the Shamrock Takhtarov fight. No. Shamrock Gracie and then Shamrock Takhtarov were both draws. So then they decided that we can't always have every match a draw. People will not go for that at all, so we're going to start having judging. So it might have been, it was probably 96. So from 1996 to, I think, early 2000, before Nevada got in control, the judging was, when the fight was over, you write a name on a piece of paper. And that was better judging than they have now. But they'll never do it, and it wasn't perfect either, but the only bad one that I recall in that whole period, in that whole 4 or 5 year period, was the Boss Root and Kevin Randleman fight, which was terrible. It was a split decision, and the deal on that fight was one of the judges that I spoke with. I don't remember who it was, but when I go like, how the hell did Boss Rutten win this fight? And I like Boss Rutten, and all this, but he didn't win that fight. And he goes, well, what I did was. I judged by dividing it into threes. So let's say it was an 18-minute fight. Actually, I think it was a 21-minute fight. But anyway, he judged if you go the first 7 minutes, the middle 7 minutes, and the last 7 minutes. Okay, Kevin Randleman won the first 7 minutes, and then Boss Rutten won the next 14 minutes. Which in fact, what happened was Boss Rutten probably did win the last 14 minutes, But Kevin Randleman beat the holy hell out of him in the first 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes of that fight, broke his nose, destroyed him. And from that, then Kevin Randleman gassed, and Boss Rutten actually he was on his back throwing elbows from his back. He wasn't really, I would say, hurting Kevin Randleman or doing much effective. He was getting taken down every time he got up. But, I mean, if you were just scoring those 14 minutes, yeah, Boss Rutten won. But the point is, so he was using the frickin' round system when there were no rounds, and that's actually how Boss Rutten ended up winning that fight, because somebody used the round system because he came from boxing, and that's what they did, instead of judging the fight as a whole like you were supposed to.
Well, I know nobody's going to care, and I know it's not going to make any difference whatsoever, but I'm going to take a stand, and starting this weekend, I am going to start using the entire 10 points. So I'm going to score all these fights from now on.
Okay, great. Your scores mean as much as my scores.
Well, I'm just trying to get ahead of the game here. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, it's like, I hate that this isn't going to change. I really do.
Yeah.
Because it's a really valid, it's a really valid point. You just want to make it better. And there's people just, it's like, well, it's good enough. And it's like, but it's not good enough. If it was good enough, and there'll always be, there's always going to be disputes. People talk about, I mean, Pride actually did that, where you just pick the right, pick the guy. And they had some questionable decisions as well. Although, with Pride, it's that whole Japanese thing that you have to understand, where the tie goes to the winner, so to speak. Japanese MMA in the big business version of it, their business was always so tied to certain things happening that they had to, make happen, in the sense of, like, if they had a tournament, they had to get a Japanese in the Final Four in those days, or else nobody would care about the tournament. They couldn't sell tickets. So for their own survival, they had to do things like manipulate. And UFC, quite frankly, at times in its history, probably needed that. Right now, UFC is making so much money, the chips fall where they may. When I learned with UFC, when they became what I would call completely confident in the product as a product and not in the individuals, was when Rashad Evans knocked out Chuck Liddell in Atlanta, costing them the Chuck Liddell Rampage rematch that would have done a million buys. And instead they had, maybe it was Forrest that won the championship, but whatever it was Chuck Liddell. Chuck Liddell was going to challenge for the title and do a million buys, and instead they had, Rashad and Forrest did do a million buys, but because they had those are the two main events. But the point being that they had a match, it cost them millions of dollars when Rashad knocked out Chuck Liddell, and they were not sad. Nobody was sad, nobody had a long face. It was just like, that is just, the attitude was, that is just promoting the fight game, and whatever happens, happens, and the right guy is going to win. And, you just got to do the right thing, and the right thing is Rashad gets a championship match because he's better than Chuck. There was no sadness at all, other than Dana being sad because his buddy got knocked out, but he was not sad from a business standpoint. I was with him that night after the fight, and, he didn't want to see Chuck hurt like that, but as a businessman, it was not, oh, my God, the wrong guy won and it cost us millions of dollars. It was just, that's just the business. That's just the fight business. But in Japan, they were not thinking that way. They were thinking that things had to happen a certain way, so therefore they had to manipulate. They manipulated all those tournaments and things like that, not fixed, but manipulated.
Well, that's going to do it for today, everybody. We're going to be back on Wednesday talking some roller derby, in fact. Going to be quite an interesting show, and of course lots of stuff coming up on the front page of the website as well. Got a new issue of Figure Four out tonight, new issue of The Observer out tomorrow. We've got some new radio shows coming up as well, including Blake Norton on the show tomorrow. A lot of news, lots of stuff. Check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.